It's been a while. It's been a while. But I'm coming.
You're listening to Sparking Spiritual Growth. Welcome.
I never thought I would fall in love.
This is the podcast that builds a Christian faith through looking at lessons from the Bible and helping apply them in the real world. It's where the Bible intersects everyday life.
In today's episode, we're looking at what the fruit of the Spirit is and what you can expect to see in your life. Welcome back to Sparking Spiritual Growth. I'm Jason Sparks. I love the fact that we're talking about growth. And we're looking at today the fruit of the Spirit. And this is one of the things that God expects for us to develop and grow. And I'm passionate about this. I've been preaching about it and teaching about it. Now I'm making a podcast for it. I would love for you to be involved in this. Thank you for being here. If you'd love to contact me, I want to hear from you. It's jason@sparkingspiritualgrowth.org. Please visit that website. You know, look around at the stuff that's there. Shoot me an email sometime. Let me know you're there. I want to give an overview today of what you can expect when we talk about the fruit of the Spirit. You know, we talk about fruit. In English, we may mention fruit. It doesn't give any indication of how many different fruits there are, right? I mean, if we're talking about fruit, you say an apple is a fruit, but also if you talk about a bunch of fruit, you know, you got 30 apples, that's still one word, fruit. It's still written as singular. It could be either one, singular or plural. In the original language, unless I'm mistaken, I know that they have a plural and a singular usage, just like we do, but I don't think it's the same. I think when we're talking about the fruit of the Spirit in Greek, I think they meant fruit, as in a fruit. If we look at it, it's not that all these attributes that he calls the fruit of the Spirit are different fruits that we grow. And sometimes we've explained it that way, but that's not what he says. He doesn't say fruits of the Spirit. He says fruit as one. All these things actually build on each other. They help each other. And when you start looking at it that way, you can start asking questions about, you know, the attributes of the fruit. A lot of these are also overlapping ideas. So the idea of meekness and kindness, they actually can be used in some sense. They can be used as overlapping terms, synonyms, because another word for meekness is gentleness. When I started thinking about, you know, what's the difference between gentleness and kindness, it was a little difficult at first, but I knew that since they were both being used, even though there could be synonyms, he probably was intending for us to see the differences between those. So one of the things I do is going through this study is ask myself, okay, what is different between meekness and kindness? And it's those differences that I try to emphasize so that we can have a more rounded view of what he's talking about when he says fruit of the Spirit. So the first one, and I made these in order that made sense to me. There's some debate about whether or not Paul put these or the Holy Spirit put these in order that they should be. And it's possible that they did, and I just don't understand it completely yet. It's also possible that Paul just put these in random order, and we can put them in any order that we choose. And so I kind of went with that assumption. I don't think necessarily that this is everything, the fruit of the Spirit, but it certainly is a, you know, it gives us the bare bones. It gives us kind of an outline of where we're going. And I do believe they build upon each other. So based upon that assumption of building upon each other, I'm looking at these and asking questions, okay, which one comes first, right? How do I have one? What about this one will actually help me build another one, or vice versa? And in doing that, I've kind of pieced them together how I best think. And the first one that I start with is the idea of meekness. Meekness is really it's a view of self. It's an acceptance of our role, an understanding of who we are, an understanding of what our role in life is, and all the different roles that we have in life. We understand who we are in those roles. We all have roles. And so we look at that and say, okay, who am I? What does God expect me to be? And that includes things like my abilities, my talents. It's putting those things into use, but doing those things in accordance with an acceptance of where God has placed me and what God expects for me out of my life. That's not always easy to do, but it is certainly the beginning of a spiritual life. Jesus is the perfect example of meekness when he went to the cross. He submitted himself to the role that he was assigned by his Father, and he pursued it. He did it to the absolute best of his ability, which was perfection, and he pursued it. That's really what meekness is about. It's accepting your role and trying to live in it the best way possible. Well, that brings you to kindness, because which is the next step. And it's kind of like these are kind of like dimensions of the spiritual fruit. Meekness is the first dimension. Kindness will be the second dimension. And that's an expansion of meekness, really. Kindness is meekness multiplied by graciousness. So we see other people. Kindness is a word that is about how we view other people. And we can view them generically, in the sense that we know that God sees them as unique and special, that they have value. And we know that actually because God created us in his image. That's one way we're valuable. And also Jesus came in our image. That's another way that we've been granted value. And that was God's eternal purpose that gives us value. But when we understand value in relationship to our own roles, you see, we see other people in the best way possible. We're as gracious as we can be toward how we view other people, but that has to be colored in some way or in some sense. It's going to have to be colored by an understanding of who I am in relationship to that person. Now, I know it gets complicated, but this is already the beginning to look outside of ourselves, and we see other people based upon our role, our responsibility toward them. When we understand our responsibility toward them, we're going to see them in a way that is the most gracious that we can find, because that's how God sees us as well. For whatever reason, I know it's because of love, but he has chosen to see us in the most favorable light that he can see us. He's not going to be lying about it, but he also is not here. He hasn't shown up to condemn and punish yet. Even when Jesus came, he said he didn't come to judge. He came to bring life. That's what we do as well. So we look around at other people. We look at them in the kindest light that we can. You know, Paul put it in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. He said, love bears all things, believes all things, and hopes all things. So the way we see other people is very important. We believe the best in people. That's how we should be seeing people. We shouldn't believe in the worst. We give people the benefit of the doubt is another way of saying that. Well, moving on then from kindness, we understand our role and we understand other people based upon our role and how we can help them. Then we start coming up with ideas. We start understanding them for who they are. This is expanding even more. This is then becomes what goodness is. The word goodness in the fruit of the Spirit. There are actually two words in the original, in the New Testament, that are Greek words that we translate good. One of them means moral excellence, and the other one means usefulness. And this word here in the fruit of the Spirit list is the word that means usefulness. It still implies that it's good. We're not talking about evil things that are useful. We're talking about something that is good. It's helpful. It's useful. That's why it's considered good. So it's the practical side of it. If we think about it from that perspective, then goodness becomes something that is an extension of our understanding of ourself, our skills, our abilities, how it relates to other people. We see them in the best light, and we seek to find a way to do good, something that is useful for them. Some people are really good at giving gifts, for example. And the reason they're good at it is because they have a way of looking at someone and analyzing their life and say, I think they need this. And they give them this, whatever it is. They're good at it. What that does is it's showing that they're practiced at being good. They're being useful to people. In our role, we can really expand that by helping other people. So it's an expansion of kindness. Then from there, we go from meekness to kindness to goodness. Then we actually go into the fourth dimension, so to speak, and that is faithfulness. Faithfulness, it comes from a word that means to be convinced. And the key to this is going to be conviction. So now it turns from being good because you know, I think it's a good thing to do, or because maybe I'm trying to get something from someone or something like that. It turns from that to being more of a conviction of this is who I am. This is the way I live, and I will choose to do good regardless of what other people do or how they respond. I will do good. I'm convicted of that. You see? So it's evidence. The Bible teaches us that it's the Bible that creates faith. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God, Romans chapter 10 and verse 17. Because of that, we can look at the Word of God, and that will help us to learn what is actually useful and good for other people, and we start living that. We are convinced that this is who I am, this is what God expects me to do, to pursue goodness, and I'm convicted to do this. So I'm taking stands now. I am determined to do what is good, and that's because I'm convinced. I'm convicted that this is how I should be living my life. So that brings us into a completely different dimension of what it means to be good, doesn't it? And from there, we can expand even further, because when you start doing good things and you start living for what is in the best interest of other people, you start trying to help them in ways that are as useful to them, then what happens also is you start realizing there may be parts of you that are restricting or keeping, holding you back from being able to do the best that you can do, to be the best that you can be. It could be sin. It could be bad habits. But whatever it is, you start realizing there are other parts of your life that need to be brought under control. And so we call this actually self-mastery. The Bible is usually, most of the translations say self-control. Self-control is not just denying ourselves. I mean, obviously, in order to stop eating too much, you have to deny yourself food to a certain degree, right? That is self-control. But self-control is far more than just prohibiting yourself from doing something. It is also leading yourself to the point where you're actually doing things. You're already convicted to do these things, but you're looking at the rest of your life thinking, okay, what can I do that will actually benefit my ability to do good things? And what is being hindered by, what actions actually hinder my ability to do good? When we start asking that kind of question, then the idea of self-mastery is what we're looking at. And self-mastery is a wonderful pursuit. When you pursue self-mastery and you start becoming, none of us, you know, we understand, we talk about excellence. We're not talking about perfection. But that doesn't mean, just because we don't have perfection, we can't have perfection, that doesn't mean that we can't have excellence in our life. So we need to make sure we set the standard for what excellence is. And we need to have a high standard, not a low standard. We need to look and say, okay, my life is going to be excellent, not in just one or two areas where I do good, but I am going to be excellent in every part of my life. When you reach that point, that's excellence. And when you do it consistently, that's patience. Patience is the continuation of faithfulness. It's actually, it's self-mastery multiplied by time. And when we have self-control, then that's good, but we need to maintain that self-control over a period of time. And it's living the ideal self every single day. That's the ultimate in self-mastery. That's the next step of that. So this allows us then, once we have mastery of ourselves and we're doing this consistently, this brings us to the next dimension of this, and that is we're entering into finding ways to bring that excellence into our relationships. That's what peace is. It's what peace is about. So I have peace with other people as I learn to have that mastery of relationships. That interpersonal relationships are so vital and important for my growth spiritually. Now, peace relates to my ability to get along with God, right? That is, I need to have peace with God. And that comes through self-mastery. Well, that's part of that. And that comes through being saved. And it approaches then because of my confidence of, you know, if you look through the book of 1 John, he talks about if you love God and you keep his commandments, then you can have great confidence. So our confidence is part of this peace. We have peace within because we have confidence in the day of judgment. But it also relates to peace that we have with other people. It should be our pursuit. It is not required for the other person to respond appropriately. What is important here is that we grow in our ability to interact with other people. We have interpersonal relationships, and we grow in our ability to work on that relationship. Whether they respond or not is not the issue. I want to be clear about that. because our growth is not dependent upon how other people react to us. We can still grow. Even if everyone deserts you, no one wants to have any association with you, which I can't imagine. But even if that were the case, as long as you're developing your ability to have those interpersonal skills, you're growing. That's the point. And so this is where we are. Can you imagine being a person that claims to have self-mastery, but you have a poor marriage? No, you go fix that. Those interpersonal skills, those relationships have to be managed and maintained, and you've got to do everything you can to make sure that you have those skills. So developing those skills is a very important part of what peace is about. And when you understand it from that perspective, then it gives you a kind of a very big goal. You know, you're trying to develop interpersonal skills. That's a skill set that can be learned, but it's a big one. And it really adds to the meaning when Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God." Peacemakers are not just getting along with people. It's creating an environment in which you can actually help maintain and manage and improve a relationship that you have with someone else. It's proactive, not reactive. And then once you do that, if you get good, the better you get at doing those things, the better then you're going to have peace in your life. And as peace is developed and as you learn to deal with these interpersonal skills, you also then become more joyful in your life, because it's these relationships and your relationship with God and your relationship with other people that will bring out joy in many ways in your life. So you'll be able to expand that. The better you get at being peace and having peace with other people, the more joy you'll be able to find. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that as it comes along, but those things go hand in hand. And finding the best way to bring about joy in your life is going to include finding ways to be good and faithful and patient and peacemakers. And once you do that, then you start looking at how you have all that joy. It becomes kind of the next step for us. Then we start seeing how other people are being influenced. So we recognize that if we want to help other people, then our interpersonal relationships have to be maintained and have to be improved. And as they improve, then that gives us the ability to help other people grow themselves. Up until that point of those relationship skills improving, you really don't have that much influence. Those relationships can actually hinder your ability to help other people. But as the influence there, or as the relationship develops, your influence will improve, and before long, you may be in a point where you can help people actually with the idea of self-mastery themselves. That's what love is. That's the last thing in this, the last dimension of this, that we're actively trying to get into the hearts of other people to help them grow and develop themselves. And the better we get at doing that, the more love we actually have for other people. Love is not limited to giving food to people who are hungry. Obviously, we should as much as we can. But love also, in the finer sense of it, is looking at someone's life and helping them get to heaven, and helping them have that excellence that God expects from all of us, and helping to develop that. So we can do that. Well, I hope that this has been a good explanation for you. It's giving an overview of what we're looking forward to in the future episodes, what we will be pursuing. I'll have all kinds of materials and things that relate to these things. We're going to look at this fruit step by step, and most of our work will be involved with those things. So if you have any comments or questions, I would love to hear from you. You can email me, jason@sparkingspiritualgrowth.org, or go visit my website. I will respond to anything you send to me. I appreciate you being part of this, and I want to get to know you a little bit better. So shoot me an email or let me know that you're there in some other way. Thank you so much for being a part of this, and I'll see you next time.